Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app for your smart device, CairoRadio.com, and the all-new Adore Network at Adore.fm. Let's get started with the episode. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 268 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to be featuring music, new music from the band Say Hi. Our friend Eric Elbigen has a new album out that came out, last Friday. Last Friday on Barsook Records. It is a album, it's a concept album, about vampires, man. And it's friggin' fantastic from what I've heard so far. It's called Bleeder's Digest. Like I said, out on Barsook Records. It's so good. I think you guys are going to enjoy that. Also, we've got our conversation with none other than Baron Vaughn. Baron Vaughn, very, very funny comedian. You can see him on, what has Baron Vaughn been on? Pretty much everything. All the late night shows, Jimmy Fallon, Conan O'Brien, all sorts of stuff, all right? And he's also on the Netflix show, Grace and Frankie, alongside Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda and frickin' Martin Sheen. Oh my God, man. And he's great in it, too. And we have a fantastic conversation with Baron coming up for you here in just a moment. This was done over the phone, which we don't normally like to do, but when the opportunity arises to do it with somebody very special, we take that risk. Right. So there's a couple things on here that I'm going to let you know about. He was on a cell phone and we had to cut it short at the midway point for him to get into an Uber and go to the airport because he's coming to Seattle and he needed to catch his flight. So but we still talk with him in the Uber car. And actually the you can hear him even better when he gets into the car. So. There's some audio stuff in here that I hope you guys can just seem to put in the back of your mind. Okay, all right, because I did, and it's a fantastic chat. We cover a whole range of topics, man. Whole range of topics with Mr. Baron Vaughn, like the apocalypse, and computers and music and comedy and getting into. You know, towards the end there, how he got this job on Grace and Frankie, which is available now on Netflix. So very interesting chat. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? Got an email from listener Laura in Longview, Washington, that stated... And I don't have the email pulled up because when do I ever have anything prepared when I'm starting to do this show? But listener Laura wanted to hear more about my hippie dancing, as we talked about in last week's episode, really, really quickly. Here's the deal. I went to college over in a small town called Ellensburg. Met some great people over there that I'm still friends with today. Met some of my best friends. During my time at college. And a lot of those friends were into jam bands. I was never into jam bands, but I had the experience of getting into that type of music while I was in college. Now, I didn't really let anybody know at college that I wasn't really into that type of music, but I just played along, man. They were my group of friends. I wanted to fit in, right? So I went along with it. And it's, you know, it's listenable stuff. Not too into it. I will tell you the truth. I do not own any jam band music on record or CD or tape or digital. And never really did. But I would go to these shows because my friends were in these bands that played jam music, jam band music, a lot of noodling on the guitar, and I would dance to it. Okay? And so this video surfaced between friends a couple weeks ago, showing me dancing to this music with a ponytail. Yes, that's right. A ponytail and a goatee. And it was very, very embarrassing. And in fact, my wife had a little story that she graced me with the other day. She basically told me, like, it must have been, I don't know, the third or fourth date that we went on. I brought her to one of these shows, right? And my friend's band was playing at, and I proceeded to dance at this thing because, you know, everybody else is doing it. And I wanted to seem cool in front of my girlfriend, now my wife. So I danced, you know, I let loose, got a little drunk, and just started dancing. And she told me, finally, after, 10 years of being together, something along those lines, maybe even longer, that she thought it was quite embarrassing when she was watching me dance on this, like, fourth date that we had ever been on. And she just kept that from me because she didn't want to hurt my feelings. So, there. I don't know. Listener Laura, I hope that explains a lot. Oh, God. Okay, I take it back. I was into the music, okay? It's an embarrassing time in my life. I was into jam band music for a little while there. And I just, you know, I wanted to fit in. Oh, my God. I'm remembering all this right now and just, like, going through my mind, running through my mind all these times that I was dancing and how I just looked like an absolute fool, dancing like a white person. Oh, man. Okay. Well, that's enough of that. Jeez. All right. Hey, remember, folks, let's see. We still haven't had the website updated with the new Spreaker player, but we are now available on the Adore Network through Spreaker.com. You can find it at adore.fm. That's adore.fm. And if you stream the show, we'd like you guys to go there and actually stream from the Spreaker player. We are currently in talks and in the works. It's going to take a little while to get everything kind of transferred to the Spreaker player and have that up on our personal website at air-raid.net. Up until, you know, we never knew that we weren't getting the numbers from everybody who's streaming the show. If you download the show, nothing's going to change there, hopefully. But we'll let you know if something happens. But we would like you to stream the show if you stream it from the Spreaker player. So go to Spreaker.com or to the Adore.fm site, and you can stream the show right from there. Okay? And of course, you can find all the archives of the Air Raid podcast at our website, air-raid.net. And we urge you to go there and listen to all 268 episodes right there for your listening pleasure with people like Mike Birbiglia or Pete Holmes or, let's see, Scott Aukerman, Bob Saget, Jim Brewer, comedians of that nature, Aisha Tyler, yeah, man, Eddie Pepitone, yeah, man, all there, Duncan Trussell, yeah, Hari Kondabolu, who kind of yells at me a little bit in that episode. It's all there for your listening pleasure, folks, and musical guests like Mike McCready of Pearl Jam, Chris Walla of Death Cab for Cutie, Andrew W.K., Duff McKagan, founding member of Guns N' Roses. How about, let's see, Jurassic 5. Yeah, man. Yeah, dude. Yeah, that happened. It's all sorts of great stuff right there at air-raid.net. If you go to the archives tab, click on that and listen to some episodes. Another thing came up this week. Steve Ronazzisi, who we had the pleasure of talking with about a year ago, a little over a year ago, on this program. He was caught in a lie, and we got a couple of emails saying or asking what I thought about that. I had to actually go back and listen to that episode with Steve. And I think it's like episode 201 or something like that. I can't remember. But I had to actually go back and listen to it because I couldn't remember whether or not he told me the story of him being in the World Trade Center, which came out to not be true. He did not. I listened to it yesterday. He did not tell the lie, I guess, for lack of a better term, to us on the Air Raid podcast. And it actually made me feel a little bit like, oh, I guess I wasn't good enough to lie to. But seriously, Steve, you know, is a good dude. And we had a fantastic chat with him. If you'd like to go back and listen to that, you can find it at the archives tab. And what do I think about the lie? It wasn't good. Not good for him. It's going to follow him for the rest of his career. As far as I'm concerned, he made a very terrible mistake. And I kind of understand how it happened, I guess. You know, I mean, everybody has a 9/11 story. I think if you were in New York when that stuff happened, you know, back in 2001, I'm searching for the right words here. You may want to be part of the club for whatever reason, you know, be part of the club, and have this story. Now that, you know, the career that Steve is in, he makes his living, telling stories, right? Or acting out things that aren't exactly true. He's an actor. He's a comedian. You know, it's tough, dude. It's tough. I think what he did was wrong. It was bad, especially with a story like that. Not great to do. But I do know he is a fabulous person. He's a good dude. Other than telling this this very, very tall tale and unfortunate story. So yeah, those are my thoughts on that. Thanks for emailing us about it. Made me think about it because I had totally even almost forgot that he had been on the show. But he was a great dude. And, you know, we stayed in contact for a little while after it happened. And you know, he was a good guy. He was a good guy. I had a great chat with him. And it's actually a really good episode, too. So if you want to go back and check it out and hear the actual story of how he became a comedian and moved out to L.A. to pursue his dreams, you can find it there. All right? Okay, so let's move on. Let's go with our first musical break. We're featuring tunes from the all-new Say Hi record called Bleeder's Digest. This song is called The Grass Is Always Greener. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Baron Vaughn. All right, Grass Is Always Greener by Say Hi. Stay with us. Jenny was from Montana, but she moved to a metropolis. And she lives in a big brick building without a window zone.
Grass is always greener.
distraction in the soul, right?
Exactly. And the only cure is sleep freestyling.
I love it. I love it. I've noticed that you sing a lot in your stand-up routine. Is music a big thing in your life?
It is. It's a very big thing in my life. I grew up taking piano lessons when I was really, really young. And
yeah, was it a forced thing?
It was a forced thing, and that's why it's one of those things that I, as an adult, as someone who's in my 30s, as someone who beat Jesus by a year,
yeah,
I look back and I go, man, I wish I would have kept up with piano, because now I'd be able to play the piano. And then I was like five, being like, this sucks. This isn't the Ninja Turtles.
Right, right.
But then I played violin for a while, like third grade to eighth grade, and then I stopped doing that.
Was that for like a school choir or something like that?
It was a school program, yeah. It was like a school orchestra sort of thing in like elementary school. They started me early because I was quote unquote gifted. Because, you know, I'm so present.
Right.
And then I got to an age where I was like, well, I can't play the violin anymore because I'm going to do other things. But I still have that musical inclination, and I've always been able to sing.
Yeah.
And so I'm constantly making up songs to entertain myself. And, you know, I'm one of those people who's fortunate enough to make what I used to do to entertain myself in the bathroom mirror when I was 12 into my living.
Right, right. Yeah, totally. And I was like that as a kid as well. I distinctly remember this one instance, though, like where I would sit on the bus, the school bus, in the morning, and I would sing to myself. I would just always make up songs, right?
And, oh, yeah? Anyone else listening?
Well, this is the part that gets shitty, is that there was this older kid, an older brother of a friend of mine, was sitting in front of me. And just proceeded to just make fun of me on the bus, the whole bus ride to school that day, because I was singing to myself. And so after that moment, like, I always kept it to myself. It was always like this weird, embarrassing thing, which it really shouldn't have been, because singing is a great thing, man.
Yeah, and I don't mean to psychoanalyze that kid that made fun of you, but he can shut the hell up.
Right, right.
And all it was is that he's angry that he does not have the joy in his heart to be able to sing to himself on the morning school bus.
Well, thank you, Baron. That means a lot, man. I feel like we're fast friends already.
Perfect.
But here's the crux of the situation is that guy became a very accomplished drummer.
So then you inspired him, Aaron. He made fun of you, saw that you stopped singing deep in your soul, and
right.
Felt bad about it. He's like, oh, man, why did I make fun of you? You know what? It's because I'm angry. I can't sing on the bus.
Yeah.
Why don't I pursue music? I'm in a car. I like drums.
Yeah.
Whiplash.
Yeah. I actually I've never thought of it that way, but it could have been. That could have been where his music career started. He goes, whoa, that Aaron Roden kid has really got something going. Maybe I should try that out. Boom, professional
Aaron,
percussionist.
At any moment in our lives, we're a key player in the beginning of someone else's story,
mm-hmm.
in the middle of someone else's story, and in the end of someone else's story.
Right, right.
And then we, too, are living our narrative as well.
There you go. There you go.
And so you're at the beginning of that kid's story, man. That's called foreshadowing.
I love it. I'm a very glasses half empty kind of person. So I'm trying to become more glasses half full, and I think I'm making some steps right here in this conversation.
Well, here's the kind of person that I am.
Yeah.
Glass half empty, glass half full. Well, at least I have a glass and some water in the middle of a drought. That's the way.
There you go.
I see it.
Didn't you guys just get some rain down there though? You're not drought stricken anymore, right? Or
but it's, you know, it's, we just had a little bit of rain in Los Angeles, which everybody in LA loses their mind when it rains.
Right.
There was a very popular BuzzFeed video recently about that.
Oh, yeah.
But what we need is not necessarily just rain in LA. We need rain in the mountains.
Yes.
We need the rain to replenish the rivers and the ecosystem that keep this state going.
Yeah.
That's the big problem.
That is a big problem. I've been finding myself thinking more and more about apocalyptic scenarios, which I've never done before. I've never been kind of, you know, a conspiracy theorist or afraid of what the, you know, the future might hold for the planet. Although I am, for my day job, I am a geologist, so I probably should think about that a little bit. I have a family now, and it's something that is kind of irking its way into my brain, for lack of a better term.
Oh, you have a little family?
I do. Kids? Yeah, I got two little daughters. Yeah.
How old are they?
4 and 1.
Oh yeah, way too young to fight for themselves.
No, exactly.
You're gonna need to watch out for those ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
So stop. Have you seen the show Doomsday Preppers at all?
Yes, I have, and that one—that's a little too far, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I watch that and I go, "These people are crazy," and then I look around my place and go, "I am unprepared."
Yeah, I am, dude. If something happens, we are fucked.
I'm not even ready if there's a breeze. I don't have a windbreaker. I don't have sunglasses.
Yeah, yeah. Does that thought ever enter your mind though? Like, are you one of those people that are a little bit fearful of what is to come?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, I'm fearful for what is to come, but I also feel like there's if disaster comes, that's a whole different situation.
Sure.
I mean, I'm a person who is into preventative measures.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Essentially, being a member of this society and being a person who cares about politics or votes or, you know, is conscientious, what it is that you're doing is engaging in preventative measures of an apocalypse.
Sure.
You know, like all of that like we're headed towards a gigantic careening fall.
Yes.
But we do have a little bit more power in changing the destiny of that situation than we think we do.
Right, right. And it doesn't necessarily mean that society is totally going to break down when something like that happens, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, you know what I've been watching? Sometimes I like to watch British TV because England is our future.
You think so?
Because they were the world power.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And then they became not the world power.
Right.
And we're the world power. And at some point, we're going to be like, oh, we're not in charge anymore. But I think everyone thinks it's going to be this gigantic explosion. It's a slow decline,
sure,
which personally I believe we're in the midst of.
Uh-huh.
That little by little, we just kind of lose control of our stranglehold of this planet. Until we look around and we're like, oh, we're number two. When did that happen?
Yeah, yeah.
So in British TV, sometimes there's this feeling of empire past. You know, that's where their society is. We used to be in charge. Oh, cool. Now I just drink.
Right.
But still,
right.
When we were in charge, oh, man, son never sat on the Union Jack.
Weren't those the days?
Weren't those the day? But I feel like that's our future, you know? So it's not, I don't think it's going to be like a disastrous halt where we're like going 60 and we hit a wall. I think it's that we're drastically running out of gas.
Sure.
You know, and it's just like put, 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 put. We're hearing our engine make sounds it's never made before. And then at some point we're going to be stopped wherever we're stopped and being like, crap, I can't charge my phone. That's what I think is going to
happen. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Do you think there's going to be some sort of like massive communication breakdown?
You know, that's always a possibility.
Yeah,
that's definitely a possibility. You know, I think before that, I think there's a revolution coming. You know, to be honest.
Sure.
I think
sure.
that you know there's already a lot of people taking to the streets.
Right. Yeah, we're seeing it. We're seeing it on kind of a. I mean, I would still consider this small scale. Like this, you know, what's going on around the United States right now would probably still be considered small scale, you know, revolution wise.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that, like, I mean, to make a weird comparison, you know, I feel like it's the 70s again. I feel like we're kind of at the, like, it's almost like this feeling of unrest and anger.
Sure.
You know, in a time of, like, in an era where the Black Panthers became a thing, I feel like we're in a similar environment in which people have been complacent for long enough and are taking to the streets in a new way and finding new ways to protest because everyone's distracted at the same time.
Right.
Like, we all have the history of the world and every single world in our hands at every moment.
Yeah.
So it's like we have this unprecedented access, which means that people are very distracted, but it also means that we have to think about information in a very new way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's part of what's happening is that, you know, there's police cover-ups of murders. You know, in my personal opinion, our police are pretty corrupt around the country.
Uh-huh.
I bet stuff to say that there aren't good cops. I definitely believe there are good cops.
Sure, sure.
But they're also in a system that is harder to change than they thought it was going to be.
Right.
So it's like people have to be sensitive about what information they're getting and where from, because everyone's trying to change it.
Yeah. Do you think it's as systematic as that, though? I mean, is it everything that we're being fed is lie, or
no, not everything, everything, but enough of it is lies that it makes sense to look into everything.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. Like, I don't think it's as complicated as lizard people.
Right.
But I do think
it's
as complicated as people who have a lot of money are in charge and they'd like it to remain that way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's as complicated as it gets to me.
Right. Right.
So it's like, when I say that it's like the 70s, I feel like it's this revolutionary time.
Yeah, yeah.
In which we're finding new ways to take to the streets. We're finding new ways to protest, whether it be online, you know, whether it be a text message or a Kickstarter. Like, all that is protest.
Sure. Yeah, it's protest, like a Kickstarter, for example, would be protest against big business, right? You're doing it
exactly.
Yourself.
But at the same time, those are still limiting measures.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they can only go so far. So if you protest in this way and that's not working, then you start to ramp up your game. And I think that in all these different ways, game is being ramped up to the part of a long civil unrest. I think we're already in it.
Yeah, we're probably at the beginning.
Yeah, we're at the beginning of it. And it's only a few cities right now,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I think that this country is entering an era. And personally, I think whoever's the next president will be a forgotten president. I think whoever the next president is will be a one-term president because they're coming into an impossible environment.
Right. Well, don't you think, I mean, Obama kind of came into an impossible environment as well, right? I mean, with the wars in the Middle East and everything like that, right?
But I also think that history's going to say that Obama was actually better than everybody thinks he was.
Oh, for sure.
And I think we're going to be like, we're distracted by our everyday, everyone's distracted by, I got to pay rent by the end of the month.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when the history books are written, I think we'll look back and be like, oh, Obama actually did some stuff here.
Yeah.
So he was actually a little bit more of an instrumental president than we thought. But while he was in office, there was such polarization in this country. People are so far to the right or so far to the left and so few people in the middle.
Yeah.
That it's like we're pulling in different directions and that's how you tear something.
Right. Now, the scary part, though, and this gets back to kind of the apocalyptic scenario, is that you look you look at places like Great Britain, right? And they've been around a lot longer than the United States,
of course.
And they are still fighting with unrest and still fighting with with very polarizing characters in their government. Not a lot of people agree with each other over there as well. And, and you know, if that falls apart along with everything else, like all the other countries kind of fall apart, because we're seeing like the part that's scary, right, is that you have all these countries where everybody is split.
Yes.
You know, and it's not necessarily down the middle, but there is a lot of political unrest happening not only in our country, but in almost every country, right, with the exception of maybe Iceland, you know. What happens when all of that gives out? What's that?
I said there's civil unrest in Iceland, but go ahead. What you were saying? I'm sorry.
What's going on in Iceland?
Oh man, you know, before we had our recession here, Iceland tried to copy our financial structure.
Crashed
their entire economy.
Yeah, sure.
And they're still trying to figure that out.
Yeah. But is there political unrest over there? Like, I guess I don't, you know, I don't follow the news maybe as much as you do.
Well, it's not. It's different. It's different. But, you know, unrest is unrest. The reasons of the unrest are different per country. Mm-hmm. But I guess the thing is that to me it looks like the pattern is with England, once the infighting inside the country is so large that the country cannot govern itself, its interests abroad start to fall apart.
Right,
because we can't focus on that as much as we thought we could.
Right.
You know, except this is an era of corporate colonialism,
right?
Where it's not necessarily you go, you know, like the United States is everywhere. Although we do have a military base on almost every, you know, so many different countries.
Yeah,
but more ubiquitous than that is a McDonald's or a Starbucks.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
So it's not necessarily that our country, you know, like if those corporate interests remain abroad, then those corporations are bigger ideas than the countries that created them. That's the crazy thing.
Yeah. And I think you're saying the same thing I was trying to say, but just much more eloquently.
Yes, exactly, Aaron.
Oh, man. Well, welcome to the show, Baron. It's a pleasure to have you on. I'm sorry that we couldn't do this in person. But you're coming to Seattle tonight. You're playing the Annex Theater, right?
Yeah, I'm actually leaving in about 15 minutes to go to the airport to come to Seattle.
Oh shit. 15 minutes.
Oh yeah, baby.
Yeah, we should have started this earlier. Let's
talk. Totally fine.
Let's talk about your comedy a little bit, since we're running low on time. Actually, you know what? Let's do this. Let's go with our second musical break, and we'll come back and we'll talk comedy. How's that sound?
Okay, man. I could also call you from the Uber.
let's say if it goes well, and you still want to talk, you can call me back from the Uber.
Perfect. Okay.
Does that sound good?
I like that.
Okay. Well, let's go to our second musical break, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Baron Vaughn. Be back in a moment.
No.
probably am. I should have said, I meant to say at the beginning of the call that I had to get out of here like 10:05
okay.
to make it to the airport.
All right. Well, let's get right back into it then.
Okay.
Okay. So, Baron, when did, you know, it, I mean, I've been kind of following you a little bit for the last couple years.
Thanks.
You and I are the same age.
Okay.
Born in 1980.
Yeah.
What up? And I'm always very jealous of people who are the same exact age and have accomplished much more than I have. So just to let you know, very jealous of your accomplishments.
Thanks. I think it's a compliment.
Yeah, totally. Totally is, man. You've accomplished many, many things in your 35 years of life. But where did this start for you? You said, you know, you were into music as a kid, was it always kind of a, I don't know, were you one of those types that were kind of grasping for attention as a child?
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah?
I love attention. You know, I mean, like, I was a quote-unquote cut up, you know, from a young age, so
right.
I was always, you know, and I think also I was watching comedy pretty young, and so I saw that laughter was cool.
Yeah.
I liked laughter. So it's like the fact that I could make my adult, you know, supervisors laugh.
Yeah.
Was amazing to me. Like, I was younger than they were, you know? So it's just
sure.
like, I'm five and they think I'm funny. I'm really good at this.
Did it ever get you into trouble?
Oh, sure. Of course it got me into trouble.
Yeah.
Come on. I wouldn't shut up. I mean, it got me into trouble. You know, I got into trouble at school, of course, you know, sent to the principal's office a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, there was, sometimes it wasn't me who was talking. That's the other thing. Like, I maintain that I got in trouble twice as much as I should have gotten in trouble.
Yeah.
Because I also liked learning. Like, I liked listening to what the teacher was saying. Because if the teacher was listening to me, they would have seen that all of my jokes were commentary on what you were doing. Like,
this is
like, didn't she do the blah, blah, blah? That's what I'm doing. I'm turning to people riffing on what you're doing.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, I'm paying attention, but sometimes it wasn't me that was talking. He or she, my teacher, heard a voice while not looking and assumed it was me because they assume I'm talking.
Right, right. Yeah.
Just kind of like, Baron, that's it, to the principal's office. What? That wasn't even me. That was Daniel.
You've
typical
set up a
being a talking student says.
You've set up a precedent, basically. I mean, that was my issue as well. I was always had to be the class clown, had to be the person in the middle, right? Like whether it be like when the teacher was turned writing something on the chalkboard, like standing up and throwing fake grenades. You know, and then
yeah.
sitting down very quickly. I remember that was a good bit. That was a good bit in mm-hmm. sixth grade. You know,
I get you on that one.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
it was a little bit for me because I don't know that I was a class clown. Everybody thought I was funny, but I was really one on one with people.
Okay,
that's what it was. I think it's just like I had my friends per classroom. Like whoever was sitting next to me was my audience.
Okay.
I like cultivated the friendships with the people I sat next to in class.
Right.
Who, in a lot of ways, we didn't hang out. Like, we didn't
yeah,
hang
yeah.
out outside of school or outside of that classroom. We'd see each other in the hallway, and we'd be like, you and I make jokes with each other. We know each other. People don't think we know each other, but we know each other.
Sure.
Sort of
sure.
friendship. And then I had my friends that I hung out with all the time, who, in my opinion, were like the funniest people in the school.
Right, right. Yeah.
And so we were always riffing with each other, you know, and like making each other laugh. But it was a really controlled way. I like connecting with people little by little. And getting a big classroom laugh, though, nothing like it, though. Nothing like it.
Right, right. Yeah, totally.
That's what I'm chasing. I'm still chasing my fourth grade history class. You know, everyone laughing at something I said. That's what I'm chasing on stage.
Yeah, you're just you're a functional heroin addict is what it
is. Any comedian is an addict. It's just our addiction is to laughter.
Yeah, yeah. You're still chasing a dragon. It's just a different type of dragon.
Yeah, it's just a dragon made of dick jokes.
That's funny. For some reason, like the other day, I was kind of reminiscing about my elementary school years, right? And I got into a couple of problems because my mouth was so large, and you know, I got punched a couple of times.
Oh, by other kids.
Yeah, by other kids.
You were talking smack.
I was.
Some flack.
I had a very big mouth, and I didn't know when to stop. Right. That was my problem. I would get a couple laughs, right, and then I would just keep on going until I hurt somebody's feelings. And, and so that got me into a lot of trouble. Like I said, I've been punched a couple of times in the face.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. And so for some reason I was thinking about that, and I went down this whole rabbit hole of watching, these YouTube videos of, bullies getting beat downs. Right. Have you ever watched any of these videos? I mean, they are like intense.
They're brutal. Yeah. I saw, it's interesting because I see people post that on Facebook, and I don't know what I was expecting.
Right.
When I clicked on the link, because I think I'm expecting what I did, which was I could talk myself out of getting punched in the face, Aaron. That was my specialty. Someone would want to punch me in the face, but then I found a way to somehow make it okay before the fist got cocked.
Right.
You know, and I was like, but this is true as well. And they're like, oh, okay, whatever. I'll leave you alone. And they walked away. And I'm like, I'll live to breathe another day. So I don't know why I expected those videos to be a kid doing that instead of another kid body slamming somebody.
And oh,
I was like,
what? Yeah.
There are 11. That's not good for them. That's not good for his spine. That kid is going to have to go to the hospital.
Right,
for people
exactly.
Sharing this.
And there's this weird thing that I never knew existed, but it's called World Star.
World Star.
I mean, these kids are getting into fights, and then there's other kids in the background like yelling the name of the website, like World Star, because so that's a thing.
World Star is its own expression.
Okay.
It's become so popular of a thing because World Star Hip Hop is where you can go to see messed up videos of real people doing messed up things.
So like E-Bomb's World almost.
It's like E-Bomb's World except black. It's ratchet behavior. It's truly despicable ghetto behavior.
Man, that's not good.
Right?
That's not good.
And then there's a lot of fights on that website as well.
Holy shit.
So it's essentially like World Star has become ubiquitous with what's happening right now is so raw and real and messed up that this is appropriate. This is the kind of thing you'd see on World Star.
Right.
And it's appropriate for me to put this on World Star.
Man. That's some weird shit, man.
Oh,
it's some dark stuff. And I don't know why I went down that rabbit hole of just like watching that stuff, but it made me kind of think that maybe I was a bully. Back in, you know, that like I would have showed up on one of these videos and people would have been like, yeah, dude, he got his just desserts.
But then again, isn't that a good point, Aaron?
I realize it?
Well, we in that era, we weren't kids that were recording each other.
Right.
All the time. We weren't comparing ourselves to some sort of internet representation of what we're supposed to be like at that time.
Sure. Yeah.
At best, I was comparing myself to the Nicktoons. You know, I'm like, is this a day that I'm more or less like Doug? But basically, those kids are, you know, looking at each other on the internet going like, well, that's what I'm supposed to be like. And then they're just cyberbullying its own phenomenon.
Yeah,
we didn't
have
that. We just had bullying.
Right.
But now they have this weird double play where someone who's nice to your face at school is on the internet after school saying you're a bitch or whatever.
Right.
And it's just like, what? That's what they're doing. They're taping each other all the time. Because the thing is that we didn't have anyone watching, so essentially we can learn from our behavior and be like, you know what? I can't be that person, hopefully. But these kids are always going to have it on the internet forever. They're going to be our age.
It's kind of scary.
They're going to have a video from 20 years ago of them getting body slammed by another bully.
Right, right. When they're applying to be the supervisor at the McDonald's.
Exactly. Hey, you know what, Aaron?
What's up?
This is a good time to transition.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you back.
Okay.
All right, I'll call you back in a little bit.
Okay, buddy. We'll talk soon. All right, so you're in an Uber right now.
Yes, indeed I am.
I think you should do all of your interviews from an Uber from now on because it's like coming through even more clear.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's better than it was from my apartment?
Yeah, I think you need to build a small car in your apartment, and that can be like a makeshift studio.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay. I will have to actually consider that, I guess.
Yeah,
It's kind of amazing because, you know, most cell phone companies, like in the contracts, it actually says it does not guarantee cell phone service.
Right.
So it's like the phone call function of your phone, we don't promise that it's going to work. That's crazy.
Well, it's just like Comcast and their internet service, right? You pay for like you can pay for like a gig, you know, speed or something like that, and they're like, you know, the small print, they're like, yeah, you know, it might not always be that fast.
Oh, yeah, man. I love that stuff. I love how we have started paying more for just for efficiency, like effectiveness. Like, it's like if you go to the post office now, they're basically saying, if you just mail this, we don't care.
Right.
But
right.
If you buy the insurance, we'll make sure it gets there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you remember, like, when did you guys get your first computer? When did your family get their first computer?
Well, you know, actually, we've had computers in the house for a while.
Yeah?
You know, I had a kind of an interesting upbringing because my mother was very young when she had me. She was 19.
Oh, wow.
And she was in college.
Okay.
Right? So she was like, I can't take care of this kid and be in college at the exact same time.
So
right?
Did she quit school?
She didn't quit school. What happened is because she was so young, she had two reactions, right? And this is kind of interesting stuff. This is stuff that I'm putting together in my life in therapy.
Okay.
So my great-grandparents, which were her grandparents, were mad that she had sex outside of wedlock.
Oh,
right?
Okay. Religious upbringing, yes.
Religious upbringing. Southern Baptist black people.
Okay.
Okay. Then my grandmother, my mom's mom, was upset she wasn't having an abortion.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so my grandmother was progressive. My grandmother was like, you're 19, you can't have a kid right now, you're in college.
Yeah.
Right?
My mother
chose to have me.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so if you're pro-choice, you will have a comedian. No, that's a ridiculous. That's ridiculous, and do not quote me on that. So anyway, but what happened is my mother decided she was going to stay in school, finish school. She worked a full job, full-time job to finish school. So she didn't do 4 years college and part-time. She had to go to school for 6.5 years.
Right.
Right. To get her degree while working a full-time job, while her grandparents, my great-grandparents, tended to her son.
Okay. So you were basically raised by your great-grandparents.
By my great-grandparents.
Yeah.
Right. And so not a lot of people say they knew their great-grandparents. I knew my great-grandparents.
I did as well. I was lucky enough to know them as well.
Right. And they lived pretty late to my life.
Mm-hmm.
My great-grandmother didn't pass away until I was in seventh grade, and my great-grandfather didn't pass away until the summer after my sophomore year of college.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Right? He was around.
Yeah.
And also for a couple who had been together as long as they had, for him to outlive his wife that much, first of all, statistically, he should have died first.
Right, right.
And then statistically, he should have died within 2 years of her dying, and it was like a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. Law of averages be damned.
Right. So don't mean to get technical and morbid. But my great grandparents, for some reason, had a sense that computers were the future.
Okay.
So from a young age, we had a computer in the house, and it was Because all old Southern black people need a piano in their house. There's something about you got a piano in the house.
Uh-huh.
That's a classy house.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, all these people go to church. They read the Bible. They got a piano in the house. These are some solid black folk.
Right, right.
Right. But then there was a point where I think that somebody decided, you know, having a computer in the house is also a good thing. Because you can be connected to the future if you want.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, you need to learn about the Oregon Trail.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah, the Oregon Trail. Thank you, third grade.
Yeah, man. I was never good at that game. I could never, like, my character always died.
Well, I think Oregon Trail is the reason that most kids our age learn what dysentery was.
Right.
Because Katie was always dying of dysentery from you just crossing a river. And you're like, what? How? I just got on this trail.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And what's dysentery, your third grade brain at? And you're like, what? It's death diarrhea. That's what it is.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
It's putting the dye in diarrhea.
Right, right. I think later in the years, too, they changed it to Montezuma's Revenge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's different. Yeah, if you get it, if you go to, like, you know, Mexico down to South America.
Exactly. Exactly.
But anyway, the point is of that long ramble that, yes, my family had a computer in the house pretty young. We actually had it. It was a Texas Instrument. So it wasn't even.
Oh, yeah. I had one of those. Now, was that just, that was just like the standalone keyboard that you used to plug into the TV, though, right?
Well, they had another, they had a monitor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my family was, growing up, we were pretty serious about television.
Okay.
Like, my great-grandparents loved television.
Uh-huh.
And also, we were watching TV in this weird moment in the 80s where there was a lot of black sitcoms on TV.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, there was a lot of great stuff. You know, you had The Jeffersons was still on, you
right.
know, and then you had, you know, you had Good Times.
Uh-huh.
And then you had 227, which my great-grandparents loved 227.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, Marlon Gibbs. It was a spinoff. And it's basically, it was, you know, I hate saying something, the black something.
Yeah.
But it was the black Golden Girls is what it was.
Oh, okay, okay.
It was kind of three black working-class women
uh-huh.
who lived at this apartment building, and the number of the building is 227.
Got it.
And they hang out in the stoop, and they basically just chat about life. And
that was the whole show.
That was the whole show. And then we see, you know, of course, their different adventures, like the stories that they're talking about, that they're telling each other. So-and-so did this. We're also seeing that happen.
Oh.
That's part of the story. You see the scene where they went to the store and the thing that they're talking about,
right.
that they're trying to figure out. That's part of the episode.
That's a pretty that's a pretty interesting concept for a television show in the 80s.
Oh yeah, man, the 80s had some really interesting sitcoms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're also talking about the post Norman Lear era.
Sure.
You know, where
sure.
it's sort of like he was capturing the time and the essence of the time and the way people spoke and what people were concerned about. Probably clearer, more clear than everybody. He set this example that everyone kind of took up.
Right.
And we're making these comedies that were really based on reality.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but also that's the time that we could agree on what reality was.
Well, sure, yeah, yeah. And then computers took over, right? And really distorted everything.
Computers. And now reality is a genre. What?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, man. So you're growing up, where did you grow up at, exactly?
From a young age, I was born in New Mexico.
Okay.
And when I was about 7 or 8, my mom graduated from college.
Yeah.
Right, came and got me at the age of 6. We lived in New Mexico for a year, and in the middle of third grade, that's actually kind of beginning of third grade, sometime in the first semester or whatever, we moved to Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, wow.
And my mother grew up in Las Vegas, Nevada, but then spent her summers in New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
Because that's where, because my grandmother, her mother, moved to Vegas at some point because Vegas was a fast, you know, it was a boom town.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
There's a lot of growth, and she didn't want to go to California. She didn't like the beach.
Uh-huh.
So she moved to the desert.
Who doesn't like the beach?
My grandmother. I don't like the beach either.
You don't like the beach? Why don't you like the beach? What's wrong with the beach?
Because there's too many people on the beach trying to have all of their beach fun that day.
That's true.
Like they saved up a year's worth of fun, and suddenly it's about, I'm going to throw this frisbee until I care about the world again. People are maniacally trying to have a good time at the beach, and
yeah.
And all that energy is too much.
I can see that happening in a place like California.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I like the beach to the sense that I think the ocean is interesting. I like the water. I like the sound of the waves. It's meditative. But I don't go to the beach for, like, swimming and sunbathing and barbecuing and throwing frisbee with my friends. I go there for, like,
relaxation.
Right.
Right.
Relaxation. But there's too many people around that are, you know, freaking out about trying to fit all the fun they wanted to have that week to be 3 hours.
Sure, sure. Yeah, exactly. I share that sentiment, but I actually grew up on the beach.
Oh, but yeah, where'd you grow up?
Well, it's a small town here in Washington called Indianola, and it's right on the beach, and it's a very small town. Like when I was growing up back in the 80s, it was probably population like maybe 800, right? Maybe even less than that. So it wasn't very populated. You could go down to the beach and be by yourself. You could walk like, you know, a couple miles when the tide was out, and just, you know, not see anybody. And it was a great place. And now I live in Seattle, and I'm trying to, you know, introduce my children to beach life, right? But it's the same thing that you're talking about. Like when we go to the beach here in Seattle, it's just totally crowded with people because the weather is usually nice when people are on the beach, when you want to spend some time down by the water. And,
okay.
And the thing that bugs me the most though, is that like watching other parents try to explain different, you know, sea life or, you know, different processes to their children, wrong. So that bothers me. That just fucking bothers me. Like I can't stand. Go ahead.
No. I understand why it bothers you. Yeah. Go ahead. You go ahead.
Because I know they're wrong, and you know, it's not a flounder. That's a starfish, you know, or that's not a butter clam. That's a cockle, and it's pronounced gooey duck, not geoduck. You know, like stuff like that. So anyway, yeah.
That's specific.
Right.
It's such a specific anger.
I'm really honing it down is what I'm doing. Like, you know, I'm not being angry about everything, just certain small things now.
You gotta make sure it's something that's original. In the least.
That's totally true. That's totally true. So you guys, you moved to Las Vegas. What's life like in Las Vegas for a little Baron Vaughn?
Las Vegas is a weird town, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people come there to become something other than themselves, you know?
Sure.
Vegas is this sort of idea in which people can become some sort of physical manifestation of their own it. So they come to Vegas to just basically be like, I'm going fuck wild.
Right,
right,
right.
So if you're a child and you grow up in a town that's dedicated to everybody exploring their demon side,
mm-hmm.
it makes you start to see people in a very strange way.
Yeah, and
because
I guess you're lucky that it didn't like make you think that that's how life really was, though.
Yeah, but it also makes me see how much illusion everybody is operating under at any moment. Because I grew up in the Vegas that was, there was a point where they tried to make Vegas like, it was like the 90s, and they started to sell Vegas as a family destination.
Right, yes.
But that's not what Vegas was. And everybody in Vegas was also, didn't think it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, what? Make it a family destination? because they were trying, because it was always a place where you come to gamble. You know, then there's dark, interesting stuff going on in Vegas. You want to partake? What happens there stays there. That's what they ended up going to.
Right.
And it was
like,
Vegas is for the whole family. You go to an amusement park. And then they were like, okay, forget that. Let's go back to Vegas is about, because that's what people are still using Vegas for.
Right.
So it's like, to me, I'm growing up watching like, oh, which part of people is real? What it is that they come to Vegas to do? Or what it is that they left to come to Vegas? Which part of it is the real person?
Yeah.
Right? So that's what I've been thinking about from a very young age.
That's pretty deep, man, for what? How old were you?
Yeah, like 8, 9, 10.
Yeah? It's pretty deep for an 8, 9, 10-year-old.
I'm a deep motherfucker. What can I say?
What did you study in college? You went to Boston University, correct?
Yeah, you know, when I was in Vegas, there's also this the illusion, by the way, is appealing. And performers are appealing. You know, there's all these shows on Vegas. You literally see people's names in light.
Sure, sure.
You have this. There are so many local celebrities in Vegas. That's the thing, is that, you know, cities have local celebrities, but Vegas celebrities usually are also famous around the world.
Right, right.
So it's like there's a lot of people who you're like, you see them on TV all the damn time. You might see them walking around, and then you see a TV special that they're in, you know, like David Copperfield or some magician.
Right.
Or some singer or a comedian. You know, there's always, and then every huge band, and it's always so in your face, but like people are performing, hear their names in like Vegas. So that made me want to perform.
Sure, sure.
You know, and that combined with liking to make people laugh and watching a lot of like, you know, sketch comedy when I was young and stand up. You know, ranging from Saturday Night Live, SCTV, In Living Color.
Yeah.
You know, seeing Eddie Murphy at a young age, seeing, you know, Pryor, seeing Chris Rock, seeing Robert Townsend. Robert Townsend is a big influence on me. You know, Kids in the Hall, et cetera, et cetera. So it's like I was watching all this stuff and then wanting to perform, and then I kind of got interested in theater play because I was like, oh, people on stage saying things, that's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up going to a performing arts high school in Vegas.
Oh, cool.
And then I ended up saying, you know, if I want to become a good actor, I can actually train and could do this. Like,
right.
it's a skill, like a sport. It's
yeah,
a skill,
yeah.
Like anything else. You know, we're a country that believes that either you got it or you don't got it, and that's true to an extent. But also, you can become a person who works on the muscle to make that muscle stronger. So I started seeing acting like that.
Sure, yeah.
And also a lot of my favorite actors, black actors as well, were trained in the theater. Denzel Washington, Morgan Freeman, Alfred Woodard, you know.
So you were driven. You were driven to this from a fairly young age.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And driven towards performance, and then discovering, like, again, people like Robert Townsend, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor. And being like, these are literally the funniest people ever.
Yeah,
like, everyone's always talking about how funny they are and how they're the funniest people ever. So I was like, and I agree. So I was pursuing all of that and seeing Eddie Murphy movies, you know, seeing Coming to America at a young age. There's no way in the intersection of what I believed in, there was no way that I was not going to pursue performance after I saw Coming to America.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got serious about that and applied to theater schools, and I went to Boston University for theater, for acting.
Is that a hard program to get into?
Supposedly, we were in the top 3 theater schools in the country at the time that I went there.
Okay.
It was supposed to be us, Carnegie Mellon, and Juilliard.
Oh, wow.
I don't know who rates these things or ranks these things.
Newsweek.
Yeah, yeah. I think there actually is like a, you know how they're like, there's those like a college guide, like the Baron's Guide to College, if my name is spelled incorrectly.
Right, right.
So there was somebody released a performing arts college guide. Like, if you're going to apply to colleges and you're interested in these things, we did some research and crunched some numbers and did some polls, and we're saying that these are the schools that are the top schools.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So there was this list of 16 colleges that this book said, these are the top theater schools. And since I was going to performing arts high school, everyone I was around was really serious about this.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You know, they know every musical, and I know every theater school. I'm like, okay, calm down.
Yeah, so, I mean, going to a performing arts like high school, you were probably fairly prepared for what you should expect at, you know, doing theater in college and for a career.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's a little different because it's a little bit more tense.
Well, right, you know? Right. But was there...
Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry. Yeah,
well, what I was going to get at there is were there any big surprises when you actually, you know, went away to college and was like, oh, shit, you know, this is the real deal? Or were you so kind of ingrained in that already that it wasn't a big difference?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No. There was a big difference.
Yeah?
There was a big difference. I mean, first of all, you know, I'm in my 30s now, so I'm a person.
You're right.
Like,
right.
I've had experience. I understand. I understand things in a way that you can't understand if you're 18. You know, at least not for yourself. You know, you might understand the world, you know, better than someone who's older than you when you're 18.
Sure.
But you're not going to understand the world like you understand it when you're in your 30s as the same person.
Right.
So
right.
It's like, in theater school, like in high school, it's like we studied these plays, and, you know, from a young age, I was trying to figure out why the most complex characters ever written did it that way.
Uh-huh.
That's what acting is. That's what acting is. It's solving a mystery.
Yeah.
You know, it's a crossword puzzle. You know, it's a maze, and it's like, why did this person do this way?
Sure.
And how can I make that make sense to someone who's looking at me?
Yeah, I like that.
And when you're really young, it makes you see things. I started thinking about human behavior a lot earlier than maybe I should have been thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
So it's always me. That's why I'm like a quote-unquote deep kid, because I was seeing how all every adult around me was playing mind games.
Right, right, yeah, totally.
And I'm in a city that's run by mind games.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, I'm reading these plays and reading these things, trying to figure out why these complex people are doing these complex things. But you can only, from high school where I'm like reading these plays, and we're working on them. We're you know, learning lines, learning how to learn lines, and learning how to inhabit a character. And learning what emotional work is to an extent, but you can only understand that so much from 14 to 18.
Yeah.
And then going to college and being away from home and being in a very different environment from Vegas, which is Boston. I didn't have the money to visit Boston.
Uh-huh.
You know, like a lot of kids I knew had a little money, so of course they could go visit their college before they decided they wanted to go.
So you had no idea what to really expect.
No, I was like, I'm going to apply to some places. I spent all my money just going to San Francisco to audition. Like, some school came to Vegas.
Right.
And then I got on the bus from Vegas to San Francisco and San Francisco to L.A. and back to Vegas to audition for some theater schools.
Uh-huh.
That was all the money, but I couldn't afford to go to those places and see what they're like.
Yeah.
So when I got accepted to Boston University, it's like, guess I'm moving to Boston. I saw it in a movie.
Right. Yeah, by that time, Good Will Hunting had been out. You thought, you know, you learned all you needed to know.
Forget Good Will Hunting, Boondock Saints was out, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
like,
that's funny.
Oh, no, this is going to be Irish brothers shooting people in slow motion.
Yeah, yeah, and then putting pennies on their eyes.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I learned a little bit more about emotional depth and that in college. And it's only now, in the last 3 years, in my 30s, that I'm only starting to understand what I learned in college.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would imagine that you're still learning too, right? I mean, you've got this reoccurring role on the Netflix series Grace and Frankie, and
yes,
who, I mean, you're acting alongside frickin' Lily Tomlin and Martin Sheen.
Right, right.
Let's talk about that really quick, because I know you probably got to get going here, but.
I'm about 5 minutes away from the airport.
So, I mean, really quickly, how did this come about, and were you just shitting yourself when you got this role?
Definitely.
Yeah?
I mean, it's the old-fashioned way, you know? I mean, luckily, I've been planting seeds for a really long time.
Yeah.
So when the moment came, you know, like Slumdog Millionaire,
yeah,
where this dude has a specific autobiographical reason he knows every single answer.
Yeah.
You know, it was just kind of, it was the right timing and the right timing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was like, I auditioned, just simply auditioned.
Yeah.
And I was understanding things about myself and my life in a new way, because I was not in a good place before this.
Yeah, just kind of down on yourself for various reasons.
Yeah, it was like a two and a half year period where I was like, you know what, I don't think I can do this anymore.
Yeah, yeah, just
like
I'm rejection.
I'm spinning my wheels. Yeah, just not only that, but I'm in a tunnel. Mm. I'm in a tunnel now.
Okay, I can still hear you.
Let's see what happens. Okay, cool. Yeah, just rejection, but it's like I had, you know, I've been very fortunate. Like,
yeah,
I booked a show before this with a USA show, but after that got canceled, it was like, you know, I might not have a second opportunity in this city.
Right.
Like, that might have been it, you know, and that's a lot. Like, a lot of people don't even get that, but there might not be any more for me.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it was just, I was hitting this kind of financial reality, you know, based on going to college and having college debt like an American.
Sure.
Like a solid American having some real college debt. I was like, I don't think I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not in a good place. I was kind of giving up. But then I kind of mentally somehow was like, okay, well, let me give it a real shot and just throw myself into it. Stop coasting if I was coasting. And try to change my attitude, because being down on myself and beating myself up is literally not going to get me anywhere. I can't stand up if I punch myself in the stomach every single time.
Right, right.
So then I tried that, and I was trying a different mentality, as cheesy as all that sounds. And just this audition came in that place, in that time, right as I was at the beginning of that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of hit, and I'm like, oh, this worked already.
Right. That's crazy, man. I mean, it's like a fairy tale story, somewhat. Martin Sheen got to be pretty awesome to be acting alongside that guy.
Oh yeah, he's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah,
pretty cool. And he's a legend, and I've seen a lot of his movies, you know. And it's true for Sam, you know. It's true for Jane and Lily especially.
Yeah.
Lily is being someone who's a comedian.
Uh huh.
You know, is that I have a particular connection to her, especially coming up watching Laugh-In. Especially, this is a woman who's one of Richard Pryor's best friends.
Right.
You know.
Oh man.
So it's like that kind of feeling.
Yeah,
and
dude.
It's kind of amazing that I get to work with these people.
Yeah, that's great, man. Yeah. Once again, thank you so much, Baron. It's been an absolute pleasure and an honor to speak with you, sir.
Of course, man. Of course, and an honor and a pleasure to talk to you as well, Aaron.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Man, that went great. That went great. I'm always really freaked out about doing interviews over the phone. The phoners. But this went awesome. This went totally awesome. What a great dude. Very interesting story about his life, and more power to him. Man, being on Grace and Frankie on Netflix, Oh God, what a cool thing. What a cool thing. Baron Vaughn. Awesome dude, smart dude. Does a couple of podcasts that you can check out. And also coming to a town near you, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, at the Chameleon Club on September 26th. And then October 3rd, Des Moines, Iowa, at Beast Village Comedy Festival. Get your tickets by going to baronvaughn.com and check them out. Check them out live. Okay. Man, yeah, what a great conversation. God, dang it. Ah, I like that guy. I really do. All right, you can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Only takes you a couple seconds. Give us a 5-star rating. We are available on Adore.fm, the all-new Adore network, powered by Spreaker.com. We're also available on Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps for your smart device. So check it out there. Or just visit air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed and access our archive tab right there at the website with all 268 episodes. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/the Air Raid Podcast. Our Twitter handle is @AirRaidNet, or email me directly like Laura did to talk about my hippie dancing at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell someone about the show. Bring it up in conversation. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your cousins. All right? Let them know. Sign them up when they're not looking. Okay? Yeah, there you go. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, as said by a 4-year-old.
A life spent making mistakes is not only more honorable, but more useful than a life spent doing nothing.
Oh, man. Apt quote. Apt quote of the week, right? Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so, so much for listening to the Air Raid podcast this week. We'll be back next week with a whole new episode. Once again, we're going out with Say Hi's new album, Bleeder's Digest. This song is called Creatures of the Night. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.
Sailing sofas through the mansion halls. Out there he looks mean. He's gotta make a big scene, but inside he's giant toothy smiles. Why can't we go outside? Why can't we go outside? Why can't we go outside? 'Cause they're creatures of the night. Why can't we go outside? Why can't we go outside? Creatures of the night. Tina makes up her bed, hospital corners and thread. Count off the chart, but she won't sleep in it. See, once the dusk has come, the crosswords will be done. She's been with shorts since 1942. Why can't we go outside? Why can't we go outside? Why can't we go outside? 'Cause we're creatures of the night. Why can't we go outside? Why can't we go outside? Why can't we go outside? 'Cause we're creatures of the night. Why can't we go outside?